such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Everybody, welcome in TGIF. I've been wanting to say that all week.
It's Friday. Friday.
Every day seemed like it was Friday this week for some reason. I don't know. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Father.
Nick over
Welcome, everybody.
Tony, there's no TN, no TNTC.
Tony's missing.
Yeah, he's missing in action, but that's, you know, he's going to be, we have to punish him for,
for being
late. He has to be reprimanded for being late like this all the time. So we had, you know, we were doing, I had that, the interview. For, I was telling you right before, I just kind of walked in, but we had the EWTN came up and they did a, they're doing a documentary, movie documentary on Venerable Mother Mary Teresa Dujic, who, we were talking about this yesterday, in 1881 came to the United States and in this area, and because a deeply religious woman, a very professional seamstress, and in any case, she founded the Chicago Franciscan Sisters. But we talked about a lot about this yesterday. But it was she suffered a lot in her life, and so there were these interviews scheduled in addition to the fact that they were doing this this filming. So they had actors playing the roles of a priest, and I guess the priest would have been Father Bozinski. It had to be Father Bozinski. And hi, Tony.
Hey, Father.
I said we're going to reprimand you, you know, because you keep coming in late now.
You're going to have to sit in the corner.
You're taking advantage. You take advantage of the fact that Christina's back now, and so you think, well, I can take my time.
See,
and
let's be honest, that is a good thing. I never thought about it, but that, yeah. Thank you for telling me. But
so you can do it more?
No. It's the traffic.
The traffic is.
I was just involved in something
horrendous.
That is very.
Oh, did I tell you what happened to you? Speaking of traffic. Speaking of traffic. So, because I just told Sylvia, this is how we bounce around from one thing to the next. I'm going back to Sister
That's
Teresa.
Life.
But just speaking about traffic. So, it's just a beautiful day outside.
It is.
Yeah.
But I've got, we had the May crowning this morning, and then I've got mass for the two, remember the little two boys that died in the fire a few years ago?
Yes, I remember.
Maybe about 5 years
ago. And they had a big funeral.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, I have a mass for them this afternoon, and then we go into full
weekend.
But I was telling Sylvia upstairs, I would just love to get in a car and just take a little ride. But I did. I had to go Wednesday to put gas in my car, and I wanted to wash the car and pick up a couple of things that I had to get, but I knew I didn't have a lot of time. So I went, I put the gas in the car, and I went in the car wash, and I got stuck in the car wash.
No way!
I got
That's
stuck.
Scary.
Soap all over my car.
Right.
And it stopped, and the thing is making this rumbling, this noise, and it's not moving. Nothing's moving. And I can't go forward because
you're stuck.
Everything
right.
is. I'm stuck.
That's all.
And I can't go backward because you've got all these other cars waiting to.
Oh my goodness.
To come in, so I shut the car off and I left the car wash, and I went to the gas station there, and I said, you know, my car is stuck in the car wash. And so I was about 45 minutes in this car wash.
Wow.
And then they had to take it apart, you know, manually take everything apart. And they said, the problem is my car is too small. They said you have to, so you, because I've got a Yaris. It's a, it's not like a smart car, but it's a small car.
It's a small car.
It's a small car.
It's a small car. And so everybody today drives SUVs, you know.
And not everybody.
They're huge.
So what's that?
Not everybody.
Do you have a dude drive?
You have. Yeah, okay. I do too.
Well, there's everybody.
Once you start.
Nick doesn't.
Nick doesn't.
That's
Nick
what I'm saying. Not. It's SUVs. They're bringing them, they're actually smaller than they used to be.
Than what they used to be.
Yeah. It's just that you're using more gas.
Well, I like the, do you still have this?
I still have the same.
Yeah, I like Christina's.
Which it doesn't even look like. Christina's doesn't.
I like mine. Mine is. Yeah.
It's the old one. That's a pretty old car.
That's an 04.
Yeah.
But that's, dude.
But
cool.
You know how many miles I have in that car?
How many?
46,000, and it's an 04.
Wow. That's not bad. Is it?
That's not, no.
It's not.
Because I've got 11,000 in my car. And when I took it in the last time for
a checkup,
they said, because this car is, we're not leasing anymore. I bought it.
You decided it.
It's, maybe it's 6 years old or something. But they said, what, do you ever go anywhere?
Actually, no.
Because the last time I checked it, I had 9,000 miles on it.
Just go to the car wash and I can't get through it.
So anyway, he said this happened once before on a small car. He said you got to drive up farther.
Oh,
so you know you drive in the car wash until it turns red and says stop. So I'm obedient, and it said stop, so right. I stopped.
Doesn't it?
Because there's a green light that says go.
There's a green light that goes. Yeah.
So you go until it says until it turns red and it says stop.
Stop. Yeah.
So as soon as it turns red, I stopped.
Right.
Obedience. Right.
Right.
Follow the law. You want your car washed, you stop.
Right.
And so I stopped, but he said, with your car, you got to go further up as far as you can go. And so by the time they got me out of the car wash, then I had, and my car is covered in soap,
right.
I had to go back around and wait in line, and they let it go through its course, but I was out of the car
wash. You had to get the soap off.
Did you tell them who you were? And you can't wait to
the car I did wash not. Is it so I don't go? I don't want to get stuck.
I don't want to say because. Well,
okay,
well,
okay,
no,
that's
I,
fine.
No, I will say. I will say because it's good for people to know who have little cars.
Yeah, yes.
Because I've gone there before.
Okay.
But I go, this is over on North End Elston.
Northern. Yes, I know where that's at.
I used to go to this one over here. I'm not going to mention it, but there's a lot of bad stuff that happens because it's right off the expressway.
Because we've gone there. I mean, not by myself.
I used to go there all the time because it's just right down the street.
I hate to tell you both this, but I don't do those car wash things. I go to someone that does it.
Oh, do you really?
Because I was always told, well, you go through that and that the whatever the...
So you go to a hand
I go to
car
a hand.
Wash? Oh, okay.
Yeah, because when you go through that machine, there's a chance it could scratch your vehicle.
Oh.
Yeah, I've never...
You have a small car and then you can't get through it.
Right.
But yeah, I never go to the ones, machines.
I get my car washed when it rains. That's my car wash.
You get your car washed and then it rains, right?
Yeah. No, when it rains, that's my car wash.
Yeah. Then it gets
that's your car.
Then it gets more
that's
dirty.
Why I got it silver. Got I like it. The silver color because it blends in. You can't tell.
Right.
Well, my dirt just moves around, so after a rain.
Well, no, but if I had the time and the money, Tony, because that costs more money.
Is. Yeah.
Because I just get the cheapest. Right. Why would anybody get the super wash or the deluxe? I just get the regular.
My older brother, he washes his own car. Mm-hmm. It's therapeutic for him. He likes doing it.
Well, back in the day, that's all we ever did.
well, a friend of mine, and I don't know if that's here. I'm sure it is, but. Excuse me, in the suburbs, you buy a package,
right.
10 car washes, and he says he goes just about every other week.
Yeah,
well, I don't think it's even that. It's just you pay one price and you can go.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, Sylvia was telling me that's what she does.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. It's practical. Yeah.
But that's one of those, it's a little different from it's not with a gas station, I think.
Yeah.
It's a separate.
Yeah.
Or like the one off of, was it Fullerton?
I
don't know what that one is.
It's off the highway.
Yeah.
It's right. You could see it.
Oh, is
see,
that right?
I used to wash my own car when I had the time. I used to love doing it because I did the better job.
Right.
I liked it the way I did it.
Yeah, I just
you don't have the time.
No, there's no way. I don't even know where there's a water faucet.
I had my nephews and nieces do it when I was
sure.
I would throw them yeah. and they, a few
and
they, dollars,
and it's fun for them.
Yeah,
they like doing.
They would love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now they don't do it.
Growing up, that's all we did is we always washed our own cars.
Yeah.
You know, I don't even recall that they had. Actually, the first time that I went to a car wash was when we came to Chicago. We were stationed at the Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, and we came up for my uncle's 25th wedding anniversary. So first time I had been in Chicago since the time I was just a toddler. So I didn't remember Chicago. And it was the first time we really met our cousins and all that. Mm-hmm. And that was a wonderful time. I really begged my father to move the family to Chicago. And he said, there's no way he's coming bringing the family to Chicago. But we had a Volkswagen van and we took it through the car wash. It was the first time ever that I had been in a car wash.
Were you sitting in the back, Father?
Certainly in the back.
Because that's fun for the kids. So how was it when you first saw the
I don't remember the experience. No. I just remember, you know, that was the first time.
The first time.
But I do remember when I went to the seminary in St. Louis, because in Florida we washed our cars. I don't think there were at that time. That was in 1973. I don't recall that there was a car wash in Panama City, Florida, where we lived. I certainly never used one, and so we always washed our cars, you know, in the front yard.
In the front yard, yes.
Or on the,
with the holes?
Carport. Yeah, but the when I went to St. Louis as a seminarian, I think I was actually in charge of the cars, so I would take them to wash them, and it was kind of a neat experience, you know, for a while.
Or when Father Erva used to come to St. Stan's for vacation, and he used to like washing your car.
Or he
and you could hear him singing, yeah. You know, it's so joyful.
Is he coming this summer?
He's coming this summer in August.
That's right.
I meant to tell you.
I thought, because God rest his mother's soul, she died recently.
Yes.
I did send him a message. Anyway, but yesterday I was telling our viewers before you came in, our listeners.
Our listeners.
Two or three listeners that we have out there, that I did my interview, and when I finished my interview, is that we were doing the filming of the EWTN came up, and they were doing the documentary on Venerable Mother Mary Teresa Dujic.
Yeah.
And so I finished my interview, and right up to 6 o'clock, it started at 4:30, and it was about a quarter to six, and Beata wasn't coming, who normally prepares for the Mass, so I had to prepare for the Mass before I had confessions at 6 o'clock. And as I walked through the, for those who don't know, the rectory is attached to the church. Mm-hmm. So I walked through the door from the rectory, the corridor, into the sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Sacristy. And as I was coming through the door, Mother Teresa Dujic was coming through the door, dressed just as in the full, and she was beautiful.
Wow.
I mean, it was so beautiful. And
so I didn't think they were going to do it that way. I thought it was like...
No, they did. She was in full religious habit.
That's beautiful.
And young.
So did they recast you? Or?
No, not at all, no. Okay. They look at this face and they move the cameras away.
Got a face for real.
they told me I needed a lot of makeup anyway when I... and wanted to give me a wig, but, you know, I said, no, I'm not going to do it for the interview. Actually, I'm kind of quite embarrassed about that. You know, what it's going
to
look like.
No, seriously, they wanted to give you a wig?
No.
I was going to say.
I knew he wasn't serious.
It's been a year now that I've shaved my head, you know, so I'm still trying to get used to it. Sometimes I'm just fine with it, but mm-hmm. I still find it, shocking, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so convenient though, but shocking.
Right.
So when I saw her, she had made her profession. So they filmed her first profession in the church, and I have to tell you, and this is no exaggeration, because this whole thing was a spiritual battle. I told you about what happened with the timing and all that.
Yep.
And we were all freaking out because I was supposed to have this interview at 9:30, and I see that it's, oh no, it's, I'm in the chapel.
The other priest that came
10:30, and then the priest came from Peoria, and he was just being Lamont. And,
oh my goodness!
And Sister Jean Marie said that that because I was telling her how chaotic this has all been, and she said, "Yeah, it's the spiritual battle." She said when they wanted to bring the habit, because they took the habit from the museum. You've seen the habit.
Yes, beautiful.
And as they were preparing to bring the habit out, the ceiling opened, and all this rust fell into the habit.
Oh, my.
So she said it was just like
everything.
Yeah.
A spiritual battle.
I don't know if I will be a nun, but to wear the article, yeah. I wouldn't. Don't give me her genuine art. You'd have to make it, you know.
Well, in some ways, really, it was even the actress said, mm-hmm. because when I saw her, and we passed through the door at the same time, she looked so beautiful. Yeah. And I said, I know you. You know me, you know? Yeah.
So real.
Because they asked me in the interview, do you ever pray to Teresa Dujic? And I said, every time I go to the confessional, because yes. I pass right by her. Right.
Yes. And that mass, the masses. Mm-hmm.
And we always pray at the mass. Masses, but yeah. Yes, if I personally pray for her, I pray
but
to
you
her.
But you personally,
said,
yeah. Yeah.
And what do you ask? I said, ask her to make me a saint, you know, to uh-huh. give me her, not, again, to put myself on a pedestal, by no means, but just to, you know, so that I don't get in the way, like, sure. you know, remove any impediments. Because I do believe, you know, again, as we were talking, as I was speaking in the interview, I really believe she's a saint because of what she went through and because of her humility. So I need a lot of humility as well. Far from that. I'm always asking for Anthony's tongue, St. Anthony.
St. Anthony's tongue.
Because, but anyway, so, but when I went into the church, Sister said they smoked up the church, mm-hmm. you know, for this filming, mm-hmm. which is, they did that to me once in the chapel. They create this kind of mysticism, you know.
Just like you were walking on.
But what happened, she said, so they initially had her in lay clothes, mm-hmm. As women dressed in those days in the late 19th century, and then they had her change into the habit, and that's when she made her first profession. And she said that you wouldn't believe this, but it was still evident, and I've never seen it so beautiful. We were just talking about that, the light that comes through that window.
Ah, yes.
Because of the smoke.
Yes.
That was the residue, the leftover smoke.
That would be beautiful.
With those rays, you could see every ray, so that, you know, there's all these windows that surround St. Cecilia.
Yes.
So it was it was unbelievable. Wow. And they said when she came out in her habit, as soon as she walked out in the religious habit, that those rays came through the
window.
Now I want to
see
this.
The rays of light.
Yeah.
I really want to
see
this.
It looks beautiful. There is a mysticism.
Yeah. And even the sister, she's not a sister, but the actress said, she said, yeah, there's something about this church. She said, just the presence.
The presence.
That you feel in this church. So
you mentioned St. Cecilia, the rose window.
Right.
For many years, I thought it was Jesus playing the organ.
Jesus, come on.
No, and then when I started singing up there, oh, it's St. Cecilia.
Oh.
Yeah, it's very clear in Scripture that Jesus played the organ.
Yeah, I remember reading
But if you
this.
Think about it, he could. He's God. He would be able to do anything.
That's
to have
right.
a picture of
I have to take a look at that picture and see what if there's any resemblance
to
it.
I wanted to.
From far. Well, maybe I need a glass of water.
From far.
It's a pretty big picture. I mean, a pretty big stained glass window.
Yeah.
But anyway, it all worked out really. In spite of the struggles, I really believe this. Because Sister said this has been a spiritual battle.
And, do we know when this is going to be ready to view? Or
in September.
In September.
Wow. I can't wait.
Well, remember, Father, when you were writing your book,
right.
A Mother's Plea?
Remember that?
Yeah, it was that one particular chapter, Satan's Trap.
Satan's Trap.
And when I was typing, I was translating that, so you would write it and then I would type it on the computer. Every time I would start working on that particular chapter, the lights would start flickering. And I'm like, I just want to finish this chapter.
So the only time this ever happened, because remember in those days, what I would do is I didn't think I was writing a book.
No.
I was just writing reflections.
And sharing it with the parishioners.
I felt inspired and compelled to write these reflections, and I would share them with the parishioners. So every weekend, I would put them in the back of the church. Mm-hmm. They weren't even in the bulletin. They were.
No.
We prepared them and put them in the back of the church. So it happened to be Satan's trap.
Yes.
And in those days, I would go to the back of the church.
Yes.
And it was a Saturday evening. The lights were on. And I was talking to Christopher Young and Miriam. Yes. I believe it was Miriam. I think they had just been married. And I was talking about this chapter. And as soon as I picked it up and started talking about this, the lights on one side of the church started going on and off. The whole row of lights.
Yes.
It's the first time and the last thing it ever happened.
Yes.
Then I came in, and I was on the phone with, I was talking to Father Emo.
Father Emo,
Do you remember that?
Yes, Father Emo.
And what happened? Something happened.
He said he was talking to a couple also, and he was going to give them the chapter, and he said the lights went off.
Right.
The lights went off, and he's like, you know what? There's something happened.
Yeah.
He had been here for years, and he said it never happened. And I remember in the office, you had given me the chapter, so I typed it in English, and that was that. Lights were flickering. And then later, I translated it another day, evening, and again it started happening with the flickering of the lights.
Satan's trap, that's right. I never forget that. I remember that.
Do we still have your book here that people could get? Because I hear that, I just remember and I want to read this again.
I think we've only got maybe about a couple of dozen books.
Wow.
I have to be very careful now because the Marians sent all the books here.
Oh, okay.
So they don't have the book. And we've got the...
it's out there. Like in, I remember, where did I go? I went to an adoration chapel out in Joliet, I believe, and they had it. They have it in a different locations.
Well, did I ever tell you the story of when I went? Because remember, after I had written the book, it did really well in Ireland and Sri Lanka, and so I was invited to Ireland to speak in 7 different counties. About a mother's plea, and then from there I went to Sri Lanka and I spoke in a number of churches. I don't remember how many, but I spoke to the seminarians in Colombo, that's the capital, Colombo. And in any case, when I first got to Ireland, I stayed in a above a tavern. With his family who hosted me, and then they were going to take me through these 7 different counties. Every day we were in a different county and a different church to speak. And so I got there, and I thought to myself, it was in November, I think it was in November, it was cold and wet, as I think it always is in Ireland at the time of year, and I just felt really uncomfortable speaking about the book. And I thought to myself, what am I doing here? And why am I, and you know, I've got to go, this is going to be a week-long ordeal. And I asked the couple that were hosting me and had me in their home, they own the tavern, and I said, is there a place where I can go and pray? This was in the afternoon, and I had my first talk in Galway that night. We were going to go to Galway, and they said, you know, there's a couple of blocks away, there's an adoration chapel. So I went there to pray, and I sat in the back of the church, and I had my eyes closed, and I was praying. I don't know that I was even praying. I was just nervous, and I kept thinking, what am I? I'm thinking this is all a fraud. What am I doing? You know, what am I going to say? Why am I here? Every negative thought was coming to into my head, and that this idea of being a fraud, that, you know, that because these are reflections, and of course, it all began with my consecration to the Blessed Virgin Mary in 1999, it was, and during that time when I heard the Blessed Mother say, "Give me the parish, make me mother and queen of the parish." At the time, that, as you remember, Christina, yes, and Tony would remember as well, the church was really falling apart, literally falling apart, to the point that, you know, a few times we came close to having to close the church. We were, at one point, we were even investigating tents that we could put on the property on the outside. And so anyway, I'm thinking, you know, but after she said that, after she asked me to consecrate the parish or give her the parish, I did. And I told the people, and then 2 days later, we got word that we were awarded a $2 million grant to begin immediately repairs to the church.
Well, all the doors were opening.
Then doors were really beginning to open. Yeah. And a lot of tragedy, a lot of spiritual battle,
yes,
from the very beginning.
Yes.
I'm not going to mention some of it, but you remember some of the stuff that happened.
Yes.
And,
oh, my goodness.
But the... evidently that Our Lady wanted a sanctuary to the Divine Mercy, and this was being confirmed by others in the parish, and so I went to the archdiocese and I said, you know, we'd like to build a sanctuary to the Divine Mercy, an adoration chapel, and they said, well, you're a poor parish. Because at that point, well, we still are. We're not rich by no means, but it was a poor community. That was, yeah, we had a very poor community, and the church, as I said, was falling apart. So why do you want to build a chapel when you've got a church that's dilapidated, falling apart? And I says, just you know, they said, well, write something to justify your. Give some justification for building a chapel on this property, because this is archdiocesan property. So that's what began a mother's plea. So I wrote exactly what happened, how the Blessed Mother spoke to me and said, "Give me the parish, make me mother and queen of the parish." I'll never forget that day because it was a very windy day, and here's what happened. I had gone to Mundelein for something, and I'd come back. It was a very, very windy day, and I came back, and tiles from the roof had fallen off and fallen on top of cars on Blackhawk.
Wow.
Right along the parish. Two cars, I think, were damaged by the tiles that fell off our roof. And then, of course, in the interior of the church, the capitals were crumbling,
yeah,
and that's why they wanted to... and I had been trying to get money for how many years? Because that was 1999. Right. I became pastor in 96. I had been trying to get money, writing grants and all that, and, you know, in dialogue with the archdiocese. There had been a point, it had been like 5 months where I had heard nothing from. We didn't get any grant. I think we got one real small grant. But there was no money. And it had been 4 or 5 months since I'd even spoken to anybody from the archdiocese. And so when the Blessed Virgin Mary said, "Give me the parish mate." So anyway, I came in from Mundelein, very windy, saw the damage that was done to these cars. I went into the chapel, and I just said, you know what, I can't do this. It's too much. And I felt completely defeated. At a very low place, completely.
You felt like you were in the desert.
Yeah, it was like, you know, you can't do anything without any money.
Yeah.
And it was then in that prayer, it was the Mercy Hour, because at that time I was making the Mercy Hour at 3 o'clock, yeah, and it was during the Mercy Hour that then I heard this voice, beautiful woman's voice, I knew immediately who it was, and she said, "Give me the parish. Make me mother and queen of the parish." And I did, and then 2 days later, I got a call from the Archdiocese. We've awarded you $1 million to begin immediate repairs to the church, and that $1 million eventually became $2 million. But that Sunday, I told the parish, I told the parish, you know, Our Lady asked for the parish, I gave her the parish, and then that's when things really began to happen. And then what would happen, you know, during that time, because I belonged to a gym at that time, too, and so little things began to happen. So I went to the gym one morning, I don't know if you remember this, Christina, and I was leaving for the gym. I'd go at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I saw there was an envelope in the mailbox. And I said, just left it there. When I said, well, I'll just pick it up when I get back. So I got back from the gym. I'd leave the gym, go to Starbucks, get a coffee and a sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I come back. And so as I came in, I picked up the envelope, went into the kitchen, sat down, opened the envelope, and it was $50,000.
Wow.
And that kept happening. That kept happening.
Yes.
You know, do you remember
that? I remember, yes.
Yeah. Every time something, and even when it seemed like everything was going to fall apart, remember when it's a long story, people, you have to read the book, but
yes.
The Divine Mercy statue went away. We had a donor, remember?
Oh, my goodness.
There was a donor who came.
Oh, it was so hard.
It was going to, anonymous donor, but he had a liaison, and I was promised, you know, whatever you need, the sky is the limit, you know.
Yeah.
And the money was given, but not placed with us. It was placed with the Marians in Stockbridge.
Yes.
And anyway, that was, the whole thing was such a nightmare up until we had a meeting, a six-hour meeting with the head of the finances for the Archdiocese and others. We were 6 hours in a meeting. The donor, I met him for the first time. He came up, and I had Mass that night, and it was such a grueling meeting, so difficult.
Yes.
There were so many demands and so many. I felt that the vision was not being honored because things were unfolding as to what this would be, how this would be. It was really quite simple, my envision was that we were going to be building something outside the church that would be 24-hour nonstop adoration, and in any case, I knew that the statue of the Divine Mercy was leaving here to go to Rwanda. That's a long story because it was meant for here, but then it was given as a gift to Rwanda. It's a long story. I'm not going to go into the whole story.
It's in the book.
So I was dealing with that, the loss of the statue, even though we as a parish were giving it to Rwanda, the place of the apparitions. I thought that was a good thing. And that was a donation. That was Oscar Delgado's donation to the parish. And so then after this six-hour meeting, I had to leave the meeting. I had to go to the Mass, and we prayed the rosary before the Mass in those days. So I was praying the rosary, and again I heard this voice, don't take the money.
Mm-hmm.
Give the money back. And I thought to myself, you know, here I've been leading the parish up to this point about this sanctuary, but I knew that I had to be obedient, and so I finished the rosary, I finished Mass, and immediately wrote. I don't know if I had a computer at that point or not, because I was late getting a computer. But
you would
probably
write
had, but I wrote anyway. I got the message out. I must have had a computer by then, and I got just told everybody in the Archdiocese, in the downtown office, the donor, the liaison, everybody. I said, the money, I don't want. I give it back. At that point, it was $3 million. But that was the beginning. It was the sky's the limit. Whatever it's going to cost.
Right.
And I thought
too many strings attached.
Yeah. And so I thought that's and I had to tell everybody that Sunday, and then it was just amazing how things continued to unfold, and it just everything kind of resurrected itself, but it became evident that the sanctuary was a church.
The church.
And then through God's providence, you know, we ended up doing that wonderful restoration of the church and the help of the people. But it's
And then with the monstrance. When EWTN, I'll never forget, EWTN came and they had the unveiling of the monstrance, and Cardinal Francis George, he officiated the mass, and we had a concelebrating priest from your order and other priests. And I'll never forget when we went outside after the celebration, I went out with Stephen Markey. We were walking through the back by the dumpster, and there was this smell, intense smell of roses. And I mean, by the dumpsters, it's garbage. So it's like it wasn't. And I said, Our Lady's here. She's here. And the three of us, we were like, do you smell that? And it was just like an intense perfume, like not even the most expensive perfume.
You could tell
it was her.
There's so many people that have so many stories. I mean, a lot of times when I would be in the back of the church, people would tell me things. And you honor everything you hear because you we know.
Yeah, it was, and it was actually from that from the unveiling that the door was. Then it was she wanted the doors open. 24/7, and they have been. The only time that we had to close the doors was for the lockdown. But the again, it's not about numbers, but it's about what happens to people's lives when they
and just the come confessions off the as well, Father.
And confessions. And open the confessional. Anyway, that's how do we get into that? But
the whole point is that the spiritual battle. There's always a spiritual battle.
And it kind of relates to what you know when we talk about Saint Maria Teresa, Saint Venerable Mother Mary Teresa Dujic, I said, really, you know, her legacy lives on in the parish because she was called Chicago's Apostle of Mercy because of her work with the destitute and with the elderly women and with the girls and orphans and all that and the sick. And it, what was interesting, too, and this is a little tidbit that I just don't think it's coincidental, but the when we finally were able to begin looking into the restoration, it meant the full restoration of the church, to repair what was falling apart. Because what happened to Holy Name Cathedral, St. James, which is was raised, was St. James, that was what's his name, Mayor Daly's parish, home parish. On 26th Street, I think it was. But anyway, that was raised because we all had the same architect and it was the same defect in Holy Name. So if you remember, around the same time, Holy Name was going through a whole repair. And restoration, but
I think
repair.
That their ceiling came...
It was all the problem was with the trusses. And so that's why... And because we're right along the expressway, so the movement, and when they widened the expressway, when they did repair, they were really drilling deep down, and that was affecting the church because we're literally right on the expressway. And this is a parish that moved in expressway, but the repairs with the architect. Thank you, Christina. So they wanted to, for the restoration, they wanted to see what was the original color of the church. And so they asked if they could take a little section and just, how they do that, uncover the layers of paint to find out what the original was, because we wanted to bring it back to its original, as much as possible, bring it back to what it was originally. And they came back. This was Regali. They came to me and they said, you know, do you mind if we uncovered? There's a letter, a letter that we would like to. Do you mind if we try to uncover it to find out what the word is? So they didn't expect; they just expected a color, and they actually uncovered a letter. And so I said, yeah, go ahead and do that. So they uncovered the whole word, and the word was Were we talking about this yesterday?
We talked about that yesterday, but we were off air.
Yeah. Mercy. And that's a Polish word for mercy.
Which is quite interesting that everything here, even with the divine mercy, is mercy.
And mercy. Open those confessionals, you know. Mm-hmm. The vision is perhaps that eventually, and certainly when I'm gone, you know, because the canons are designated to take over and they've got the lots of vocations. I mean, who knows in God's providence what will come, but that there could be even more confessions.
Yes.
Anyway, Nick wants me to take a break, and we do need to take a break. So don't go away. We'll be right back on Father Anthony on Winds of Change on the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI Catholic Radio on AM 750 WNDZ and on 88.5 FM WFSI.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
I'm Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Koska, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
Sometimes it's tough to hear winds of change over the air, what with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear winds of change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststanschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button, or visit Winds of Change Facebook page to see the Listen Live link. Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Koska is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when Masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Do you have trouble with some of the teachings of the church? Well, I have good news for you. I am Father Thomas J. Loya with a Theology of the Body moment for the Tabor Life Institute. In a sense, the church has no teachings. It is God who has the teachings. It is God who created the divine order of things, and the church simply points to that order and says, be honest to that order and you will be happy. The why behind what the church says about any moral issue has to do with whether or not we are telling a truth or telling a lie with the language of our bodies. If we are honest with the language of our body, we'll be holy and therefore happy. Being dishonest with the language of our bodies results in hurt and therefore unhappiness. Almighty God and the church want us all to be happy. Having a problem with church teachings really means having a problem with God and of not understanding the theology of the body. To find out more about the theology of the body, visit taborlife.org. Taborlife.org.
Welcome back. I'm Father Anthony at Winds of Change, TNTC. Tony, Nick, Tony, and Christina. So I forgot that I always get sidetracked. There's a word for that. Your thoughts are all over the place. But so I wanted to go back to the Ireland story. So I was in this chapel, and all these negative things were going through my head about the mother's plea and why am I here and what am I going to say, and I'm not one to go out. I have to be in the pulpit in my church. Mm-hmm. I'm not one to be on on stage. I learned that a long time ago.
On tour.
On tour, anything like that. I'm not, not and don't want to be
a
celebrity priest.
You're more comfortable at home.
Yeah. I'm a homebody. But anyway, so I'm in this chapel. It's cold. It's wet. You know, that biting cold. And I'm,
I've
got my eyes closed. I'm not necessarily praying. I'm just thinking, you know, why am I here? I shouldn't be here. This is all a fraud. You know, it's and who am I? And all this kind of stuff. And then when I open my eyes, a woman's walking down the aisle, and she's carrying in her arms a mother's plea.
Wow.
And so it was kind of like, okay.
It's a sign.
So somebody's reading here in Ireland. But
she didn't recognize you?
No.
Because your picture's on the cover, no?
I you know, I don't know if that was the initial, because the first book didn't have my
picture. Have
yeah, that's picture. Right, it did.
But the second,
think
was
it was
the second?
I think it was the first book that did really well. And the second book, the only difference is there's that, which is my favorite chapter, The Apocalyptic Awakening.
Yeah.
That was, that's really my favorite chapter. And then, of course, there's a lot of additional things after that. But even that was surreal. Since we're on the topic, we'll just talk about that, too. But so I had taken a group of pilgrims to Europe. We went, Christine, I don't know if you were on the trip or not. Tony, did you ever,
no.
You never went on any of our trips?
I don't like travel.
But we went all through Italy. It was an Italian pilgrimage, went all through Italy. And at the end of the pilgrimage, I had agreed with Oscar that he would fly to, he would meet me in Rome, and we would fly to Patmos, which was the island of the apocalypse. That's where St. John was imprisoned because for having given witness to Jesus. And it was on that island, on Patmos, that he had the mystical mystical experience and wrote the last book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, in a cave. And so I wanted to, we wanted to make a retreat on that island, and then from there, cross over to Ephesus, in which is in Turkey now, and to visit Our Lady's home there. In any case, we got to. I was really tired from the pilgrimage. We flew to Athens. I had to take a little plane to a little island, an island called Samos, because Greece is just all these islands. Had to go to Samos, spend and then pick up the ferry boat in Samos to Patmos. It was a 3-hour ferry boat ride. It's like a ferry. It's like a bus. It goes from island to island to island. So we were supposed to leave about 2 o'clock, but this was in November again. And it was cold, and it was very, very windy, unseasonably cold and windy. And so the ferry never got there. It didn't get there until about 9 o'clock that night, which was okay in a sense because they were feeding us, you know, fresh squid and all that. You know, everything was, it was just delicious. And more. When we got there, we were the only ones there, you know, and then people started gathering. You were kind of out, you felt like you were out on the boondocks, you know, and it just was very stark. Everything was pretty stark, and I felt like kind of like Siberia or something. So we got on the ferry boat, and what's interesting is you just think about everybody put their bags, you know, just by the door, and then went up, and you know, didn't worry about anybody steaming or anything. And so we made the ride. We got to Patmos about midnight, and at that point I was really tired. And he had arranged for us to stay in this home where there were apartments. So he had an apartment on one floor. I had an apartment on the second floor. He was on the third. I was on the first. He was on the second. And then there was a lower floor, second floor, third floor. And so I had a second floor apartment. He had the third floor. And then the owner, his name was Peter, he had the lower He owned the building, and he had the first floor apartment, and there might have been more apartments. I don't know, but anyway, so it was. I was really, really tired, and we were going to meet early in the morning for breakfast, and then go to the cave and begin the retreat. The cave where the allegedly Saint John wrote the Book of Revelation as he was imprisoned. So I went to bed. I locked the door, went to bed. I didn't look at the apartment. I just went to bed. Locked the door. It was one of these doors where the key is in the door. Mm-hmm. So I left the key in the door, locked the door, and went to bed. And then I just went out, completely out. And I woke up, and I thought, oh my gosh, what time is it? And it was pitch black. I couldn't even see my hand in front of my face because the curtains were closed, and I didn't get a feel for the apartment. Mm-hmm. So I got up, thinking, you know, I got to find out what time it is, and for some reason I said, no, I'm just going to go back to bed. Obviously it's too early, and so I dove into the bed, and instead of diving into the bed, because I couldn't see anything, it was pitch black, I dove into a glass top table. It was a side table, and cracked, and it just opened my head, mm-hmm.
The impact.
What is it? PTS, post-traumatic
syndrome.
Yeah, I can feel it now. I put my head. My head hit the glass. I didn't mm-hmm. know what it was. It was just jolting. It was just jarring, and I put my head, hand on my head, mm-hmm. and my head. It was like my forehead was wide open, and I could just feel the blood just running out. And then I think I blacked out. I don't know, but the next thing I knew, maybe this was my guardian angel. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but the next thing I knew, I was in the bathroom. I turned on the light. How I got from there to the bathroom, how I even knew where the bathroom was, I don't remember. But I turned on the light, and I looked in the mirror, and my forehead was open, and blood, I was just covered in blood. And so I went up, I opened the door, went up to Oscar's room. I'm banging on the door.
Oscar.
Banging on the door. He comes to the door, and he sees me completely covered in blood. My forehead is open. Mm-hmm. And Peter downstairs heard when I hit the table, it woke him up.
Oh, my goodness.
So he was coming up. He was coming up the stairwell when I was in. And as God is my merciful judge, I have no idea of what happened. I don't know how I got dressed. There was no doctor on the island. Peter was able to locate a medic, mm-hmm. a young medic. He was like 19 or 20 years old. And they took me to this, wrapped a towel around my head and all that, and took me to this medic. There was no anesthesia. And so I had to lay down. The room was barren, completely mm-hmm. barren. And for 3 hours, he was stitching up my head. And the thing is, when it was done, and again, I had no anesthesia, but I think I was kind of more in shock as well. Mm-hmm. Well, I did almost go into what they call a shock.
The body goes into shock. It's like a protection.
Right, yeah. And so at one point, then he finished, and he told me to sit up. And I sat up, and as soon as I sat up, and he had bandages around the head, as soon as I sat up, blood was coming from the bandages. Wow. And now Oscar's father was a surgeon. Mm-hmm. And so Oscar said, you've got to put more stitches into his head. And so...
And you said there was an image.
There was an image of the divine, an icon of Christ behind me. You know, that was my, kind of when they told me that, it was a source of consolation.
Yeah.
So then finally, after finally successfully stitching me up, they told me I had to get immediately back to Samos and get into a hospital, which meant I had to take the 3-hour ferry because there was no there was nothing there. There was no doctor on the island. And So we did that, and but before we did that, we went to the cave. We had to go to the cave, and I remember going into that cave, and it was a horrific experience because I felt like everything was coming after me. I like the rocks, you know, the yes. hanging rocks and all wow. that. I felt like.
Because you lost a lot of blood, Father.
Yeah. Oh. When I went back to the apartment to yeah. get my things, it looked like somebody had been
massacred,
macheted to death. It looked. I couldn't believe I lost so much blood, and very weak going back. We got to Samos, went into the to the hospital, to the emergency room, and there was, if you can imagine, there was blood all over the place. People were smoking, and they said, "We got to put you in the hospital." And I says, "No, I can't. There's no way I'm going to go in this hospital."
Right.
I said, "I'm going back to Rome," and they said, "You can't make the flight." I says, "I'm going back to Rome." I knew I couldn't come back to the United States.
Sure.
But we were able to get a flight back to Rome, and Oscar had to come back to the States. But I recuperated for a week in Rome before I could come back.
I remember Oscar called the office, and he said, "Oh, we're over here with Father." And he said, "Father had a minor accident, but he's okay." And then he's like, "Okay, he's not okay." I said, "Well, what is it?"
Wow.
And I said, "Put him on the phone. I want to hear Father. I want to hear his voice. I want to see if he's okay." So you were on the phone. Your voice was a little shaky. But then you started joking about the towel. You said it was a white towel, and now it's a beautiful red.
I don't remember
you
that.
You said that. I'm like, okay, he's okay. Oh, he's being gosh. Himself.
So, but here's, because we're coming to the end of the show, but real quick to bring this to a close. So on the way back on the plane, I'm all bandaged. My whole head is bandaged. I've got black eyes. This is weak. And
who's
somebody's coming down the aisle, and she goes, "Oh, Father Tony, what are you doing here?" And it was our community nurse
yes.
on the plane, the resurrectionist nurse. Uh-huh. But the last thing is, when I got back, I was preparing then for Sunday masses. Yeah. And it just happened to be the Feast of Christ the King by this point. Oh. And so I open up. I'm sitting in the chapel. I've got my head completely bandaged. I've got black eyes. And I open up the scriptures for the Sunday. And the first reading was from the book of Revelation, and it starts, which is why we start the program, we used to, from time to time, "I, John, your brother, from the island of Patmos,
wow.
share with you the distress, the kingdom, and the endurance we have in Christ Jesus."
Wow.
And then I couldn't stop reading it, and then there's a point where in the book, before the evil would be released, "Mark the foreheads of my servants." And so I just kind of took that
you had
as
the mark.
I had the mark. Anyway, it was, we're out of time now, but a light Friday, you know. But yeah. Really, I do believe in spiritual battle, and I do believe that God is working in here and everywhere. If we just have the disposition, the receptivity to be open, to allow Him to take possession of our lives, which isn't easy. It isn't easy, because and he didn't say it would be. He didn't deceive us. He said, "Yes, in this world, you're going to have trouble, but have courage, be at peace. I've conquered the world." And that was right before he went to the Garden of Gethsemane, and those to whom he spoke were, as I tell you so often, were all martyred. All but John, who was imprisoned on the island of Patmos for having given witness to Jesus. All right, everybody, have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for being with us. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen. Amen.
Peace be with you. Ciao. Meaning
is strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.